And the previous program was the Gary Noel Show. Gary Noel can be heard Monday through Friday at noon here on WBAI. Coming up next is The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. Once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Now stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Buddy. This is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. In the studio today with two good friends, Lisa Arnone and Julian Joiello. We're going to be talking today that something that Julian came up with was what affects decision making. And today we're going to talk about some of the factors that affect you, which are both cognitive and emotional. But before I do, I want to let you know that over the last few weeks, I've been thinking about this radio program. My deep gratitude goes to all the people who have co-hosted with me over the years. Originally, Dr. Deborah Hillman, then Dr. Bernard Starr, Dr. Bill Astwood. They were co-hosts for a while. Then Roberta Atti, some of you will remember her. Stephanie Dombra, brilliant Stephanie. Lisa, of course, was with us. And the best of the best, Linda Vanella. Linda was terrific at digging up stuff and being able to understand stuff. And when she's available, she will be with us. And, of course, there's the inimitable Julian Joiello, who steps into both places.
Hey there.
Hey there. Okay, Julian, let's talk about decision making. Let me start off with this. Let's start off with this emotional bias. Let's see, Lisa, what are we talking about?
We're talking about the ways in which our emotions affect our ability to make decisions and the decisions that we make. There are certain emotions that are clearly very influential about decision making. Sadness, anger, guilt. So, for example, if you feel sad, you might look at things in a more dismal way, in a more pessimistic way, and that will affect your decision.
So, for example, if you're going to buy a house and you're feeling sad that day, right, and you say, this is not going to work out, you just get a kind of dumpy feeling.
Yes.
Where if you weren't feeling sad and you looked at the very same house, you may be able to evaluate it better. But the sadness sweeps over you and affects your decision making.
You imagine a different future for yourself if you're sad or if you're happy.
Okay.
Fear affects you because it overwhelms your ability to make a decision. So you're stuck between two things that are terrifying to you and often pause, but not making a decision based on what would be cognitively necessarily the best, but what would be the least painful or the least scary.
Oh, and so you're not making it right, the one that would bother you the least.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And anger affects your decision making because, in a way, anger can blind your sense of reason, something's coming out of your mouth before you even know that you're saying it.
Yeah, so anger makes people who are angry tend to make decisions faster.
Right, impulsively.
Impulsively,
yes.
Than people who are not angry.
Absolutely.
And sad people barely can initiate a response, and the frightened people, right, they'll always be ambivalent.
Yeah.
Or you should bring one of each with you when you go to buy something.
Yeah, in my research, there's something called a zero-risk bias, which is basically the idea that people want to reduce a small risk to zero risk before they actually make a decision sometimes. So that's related to the fear aspect.
So stress can play a big role in decision-making. Acute stress can alter the response to moral dilemmas. On the other hand, stress does not always alter everyday moral decision-making. Remember, we had a thing that we grew up with, which they taught us, which is pause and reflect. I wish we could live by that, but this society, the way it's moving, all that's happening, the speed of everything.
It's fast forward.
It's all fast forward. Pause and reflect is now fast forward. Maybe slow it down or always play, but it's always in motion. So the emotional effect on our decision-making, sometimes you hope it's right. You know, I remember when I was younger, I worked at a trading desk. And somehow I had a good feeling about things. So 6 out of 10 times, I guessed right. And that was all they needed, 6 out of 10. Because if you lose 4 out of 10 and you win 6 out of 10, that's fine. And it was just based on my instinct.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I didn't even think. Well, that's it. Go after that. Come after that. And that worked. All right, now let's look at the other ones. That's emotional bias. Now, probably emotional bias lays it underneath all of this. And by the way, we want to take your calls today, too, at 212-957-2729. Our precious studio has enabled us to be able to include you in the telephone conversation. 212-957-2729. So I think emotional bias is at the underneath, even intellectual bias. But right now what we want to look at is called cognitive biases that seem to affect everything we do. Now, this was all Julian's research. So,
yeah,
Julian, lead us.
Well, so I was thinking about decision-making, and I was trying to figure out what goes into this, and is this all rational, or, I mean, obviously, as human beings, we've got all of this behind the decision-making that maybe we aren't aware of. So I wanted to learn about how many different things affected my decision-making. So I looked up something called cognitive bias, and we did some research, and we made this list of all these different ways that these biases can frame our decisions. And, I mean, the first one here we have is called an affect bias, which is the way you feel, you're based on the emotional bias that we were just talking about, filters the way that you interpret the world around you.
And they include feeling, not only emotional feeling, but they include even if you're feeling sick, or if you're feeling tired, that'll affect what you're doing. See, but in this particular case...
Well, one of the examples we found on here was if the words rake, take, and cake all flashed in front of you on a screen or some kind of screen in front of you, for 1/30th of a second, if you were hungry, you would recognize the word cake, and that would be the one that you saw, because that's how the brain biases towards these ideas. And along with that, you have something called I thought was really interesting. It's called an observer expectancy effect. So it's kind of like we see an outcome based on what we want. So let's say we go into a bar and we want a girlfriend, or you're looking for a romantic relationship.
Company.
You want company. Yeah.
We want to not be feel alone.
You'll see company in everything around you.
Right.
You're looking for it everywhere, and you see it reflected back at you because that's what you want.
So your expectancy bias is you're hoping to get something and you won't observe, you won't see the fact that, you know, the guy's got a Nazi emblem in his ears, right? You may not see that.
Sure.
Okay, you would look past it because you have your expectancies. Well, what about this anchoring bias they talk about, Julian? What about that? What was that about?
Well, anchoring bias is really interesting because it's about how people are over-reliant on the first piece of information they hear. So that you get an offer of some kind. Let's say you're selling something or you're buying something. The first offer that you hear is the one that you base everything else around. So we were talking about, you know, at an auction or something like this, if somebody says $5,000 on the bid, everything after that is based on that original bid, and it's anchored.
Right, and sometimes it's silly. Sometimes, you know, for example, I've seen people offer things that are unreasonably high-priced. So they'll say this bottle of wine is worth $10,000, but you know it's worth $500, and you go in there, but you're afraid to bid $500 because somebody valued it at
$10,000. You've heard this word, $10,000.
You heard this word. So anchoring bias, very often, connects you to the first piece of information you hear. See, it's like the sale price on a house. you know, or something like that, where your decision is based on the very first number you hear.
Right, and that's why a lot of the time I think in shopping they'll put a retail price, which is much, much higher, a list price, so you can look at that, and then they're like, oh, but it's on sale, and it's 50% off, but really,
I see, it was
never that price.
So we have these ways of being blinded in our own decision-making. Some of these affect us without our even knowing about it, like the bandwagon effect.
Which is an effect where people, you are influenced by what people around you are feeling and thinking about something. So your decision is affected, even if it goes against your original or your natural inclination. Other people's, and this would be something that happens in juries, I think, where people are discussing something and they're voting, and you start to be influenced by what other people are saying, even though originally you thought something different.
Right, so sometimes your own judgment is clouded by the effect that of what the group is having. Okay, so you may say, well, that's not so bad, but by the end of the time, it sounds terrible.
Well, I wonder if that would also be under, like, a mob mentality.
I'm sure.
Definitely, yeah.
I'm sure.
And a kind of funny bias also that we found is literally failing to recognize your cognitive biases, which is what we're talking about today, is a bias in itself.
Right. And now this goes to all of the beauty of being able to look at yourself. See, one of the things you get as you get to identify who you are, right, in this world, and you get this advantage, now you go away with it and you learn things. Like if somebody says, I can't go out with a man who wears hats. And you help that person dig out, what is it about hats? Well, the hat's related to my uncle. My uncle was an offensive guy. And you're no longer afraid of people with hats. So our biases very often are based on perceptions from another time that you, Lisa, I know specifically, help people target.
Yeah, I was just thinking about things that you can think about yourself from school, even just, I'm not good at math. Well, maybe you had a bad math class and you started to think, and you didn't do well in it, and then you make a decision about yourself for the rest of your life. That affects what profession you go in. You know, it affects where you think you're able to move in your life.
I have a friend who sings, and she loves to sing show tunes. She remembers all the lyrics. When she sings, one day I was noticing as she was singing the lyrics, she stretched her voice out almost to mock herself. You know, so she was singing, and then she pushed her voice as if to make fun of herself, and I asked, why is that? And she said, because my husband, when he hears me sing, tells me I sound terrible. So now she's doing it another way. Actually, I said, well, let me hear you sing without that. And she had a beautiful voice, at least a voice that was nice. So the bias there is having been told. Being good at math, for example, you know, if you have a father who says you're stupid, you have a bias. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it.
And about the man also who hears the beautiful voice and says it's terrible, he has a bias.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. There's another thing called choice supportive bias, which is really interesting, actually. And a lot of people do this. When you choose something that's yours, you tend to feel positive about it just because you've chosen it, even if the choice has flaws. I found that, you know, if you think that your dog is the best dog out there, you think it's awesome even if it bites people or if it's rowdy or if it's ugly, you think it's the best because it's yours.
You know, I've seen so many people with vicious dogs, you know, in their homes.
And they say it's the best dog.
You know, we know somebody, right? Don't we know somebody with a vicious dog, right? And it's a German Shepherd, usually, that they have, and it's their favorite dog. It's a dog in their house.
You got the Rottweilers.
And he bites. Mm-hmm. And he's mean.
And they've got it on a big chain.
And they have it on a big chain, and they say, stay away, he bit a little girl last week. But he's really a wonderful
dog. But he's one of the best Rottweilers.
He's one of the best, yeah.
He's one of the best biting Rottweilers.
Yeah. So that's a blind spot. Is that a blind spot bias?
No, that one's actually what we call a choice supportive bias.
So how does it work? Your choice, you choose something.
So you've chosen something, and once you've chosen it, now it's yours, you want to own it. And so that's kind of what's happening in the mind.
And you ignore all the information.
You ignore everything else that could tell you that it's the wrong choice, and you say it's my choice, so it's the best one.
Well, so maybe the choice makes it an extension of yourself. It's part of who you are. So if you're saying it's wrong, then you're saying you're wrong.
And sometimes, well, it gets a little bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where understanding yourself makes a big difference. Our number again is 957-2729. A couple of people called right at the beginning, and we didn't answer the call because we wanted to go through this. But 212-957-2729, about 5 minutes, we'll take a call.
So moving on, we have something called a clustering illusion. And this is the tendency to see patterns in random things. So as people, we try to take the world and sort of categorize it and turn it into patterns. It's sort of like in gambling, for example, the idea that red is more or less likely to turn up on a roulette table after there's been a bunch of reds. You say, even though it's a 50-50 chance or a 20% chance, it changes in your mind because you've seen so many just now.
So a number of things have appeared, and you say, because I've seen this, mm-hmm. it's going to be, this is the way it's going to be.
Right.
And it's based on that rather than your own judgment. You know the difficulty about being an adult? You begin making choices based on your own judgment, as opposed to the choices based on what the other kids are doing. You know, like, what are the best sneakers? Ask any kid nowadays, what's the best pair of sneakers? And every 2 years, it's going to be a different best pair. What were your best pair when you were a kid, Julian?
We really liked these Heelys. They had wheels on them, but only a few kids could get them. And you'd be walking around in middle school, and there'd just be one kid who's just like literally sliding around the school, and you're just like, that's just the coolest thing ever. I want them.
Heelys,
yeah. I always thought those were so awesome.
Ours were Keds.
Keds, yeah. I know Keds, too.
Keds. 212-957-2729. There's a curse of knowledge. There's when certain people who are too well-informed cannot understand the common man. There's a bias that comes from that. It's like Sheldon in Big Bang Theory, who can't understand the waitress Penny.
And what's interesting is right now, in 2014, this modern time, you have the internet always. So you can access any information. So this becomes a lot of people. This is a lot more than it used to be because you have so much access to information. So I feel like this curse of knowledge is almost applying to more and more every day because we have so much access.
I'll find out. I hear so many young people saying that every time I say something. Hey, I wonder what time. I'll let you know. I wonder what time it is in Singapore.
Oh,
let me look it up real quick.
Give me 3 seconds.
And you just put in the question. You don't have to really find a way to define it. You just put the question in.
You just need to know how to ask questions.
That's it. That's the new thing. Now, what's the decoy effect?
The decoy effect is where you can, if you have two things, and a person chooses, say there's a big and a small, and the person wants to choose between those two things and chooses the small, if you introduce a third thing, it will actually affect their decision making.
Right, so this happens at like fast food places. So let's say instead of two sizes of soda, they offer three. So that at first when you've got a small and
small,
a large, people
large.
Will buy the small because they're like, oh, okay, this is the better choice. The big one's just too big. I might as well go with the small. But if there's three choices, there's a small, medium, and large, all of a sudden that third choice makes the medium one available, and you want to get that one.
Wow.
And that's called the decoy effect.
Yeah, and it's great. It's great that people have learned how to play to our own biases, you know? And it's one of the things we want to watch for, because part of what you get when you don't know yourself is you get swept into these biases. 212-957-2729 is our number, friends.
This availability bias I also find very interesting, which is basically that the information that you have, like the specific example that I'm thinking of is smoking, that even though you know smoking is bad, if you know someone who lived to 100 and they smoked every day, you don't you say, well, look, my grandfather smoked to lived to 100. He smoked two packs a day, and he's fine, so I'll be fine.
So where else would that apply?
It happens in the place where you are have certain experiences that go against what you know to be true. I mean, I'm thinking about...
Or you may overestimate the information that's available to you.
In your life.
So often. You know what's happened to me the other day? I was at a beach, and a woman comes over, and she's suddenly become marketing. She's marketing facial cream products. And she goes rushing over to this woman I know, and she says, look at my face. Look how beautiful it looks. And she's about 60 years old. Said, because I'm using this cream, and now you've got to buy this cream. And I looked at the woman's face, and it was like a mask. She looked terrible. And she was able to convince a whole bunch of people that her face is better, even though it looked like a clown's mask. And I said, how do you do that? And then she was selling people. You could see people were buying it because she was saying, look at how good this is. So they would look at her and see how good it was.
So in that case, she's actually believing what the product says.
She may be,
puts it on, and then she believes that her skin looks better, even though it doesn't.
Yeah. Hey, we've got Tyrone on the phone.
Yes, we do.
Hey, Tyrone. Hi there, Tyrone. It's Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Nice to hear from you.
Good, good. Thank you for taking my call. I've been dealing with stuff for a long time, and I know that I have, I'm really afraid of being alone, and I live alone, and when I make a decision to meet a woman, I usually make that kind of decision at a point where I'm about to do something really important and crucial, and I kind of make a decision to end up dating someone who I eventually can't emotionally access, or who doesn't believe in what I feel for them.
Well, that's beautiful, Tyrone. So you get near doing something that's important for you, and then all of a sudden you find out that you've got to socialize and be with somebody else, and this other person and you have emotional conflict, and as a result of it, you don't get your other stuff done. Is that right?
Yes, yes. I've placed myself in that position a couple of times in the last decade at really pivotal moments.
And sometimes the chaos of a relationship is welcomed by people who don't want to progress. It's like you're insuring in your own depression. It's like, I'm not going to succeed. I'm going to do this. I'll get involved in this struggle, you know? So you spend a lot of time alone?
I do when I'm not working. I'm an artist. So in my artwork, I do have to meet a lot of people. But, you know, on my day-to-day routine, I'm generally with myself. A lot. I did end the relationship recently this past weekend because I noticed that it was just following a pattern, and I didn't want to get so emotionally lost. Even though I didn't want to get so emotionally lost.
In the past, Tyrone, you might have.
Huh?
In the past, you might have gone further with it, right?
There have been times where I've said years in a relationship that was, I mean, I'm learning how to walk away. I mean, it's not easy, because I do want to be in a committed relationship, but yeah, I'm learning how to walk away. And today was just a little bit difficult when I woke up.
I imagine. This has just ended this past weekend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, Tyrone. How long have you been with her?
We were dating for about 4 months, and it started off beautifully. I mean, but of course, I think they all in any relationship start off beautifully. But she lives upstate, and she just had questions about whether I would really commit to being with her, and she she's constantly questioning me. And
so you got the idea that something was wrong. You said this isn't working, but you know, we talked about the expectation bias. You meet somebody and you hope that the romance is going to make you feel connected and make you happy. You know, when people say I love you, they don't really mean I love you. They mean I love the way I am when I'm with you.
Right. See, I've heard this.
And Tyrone, you felt good when you were with her for a good period of time. Now,
yeah.
In the past, if somebody stepped on your toe, you might have ignored it because you were invested in the love. Now, something about you is changing. And you're saying, I value myself more than I value this other self who gets lost in these relationships.
Yeah. I mean, I have learned how to walk away. It's been a weird year. But, you know, I've learned to walk away.
But it's very sad, isn't it? It's very sad with the loss. And Tyrone, I imagine you wake up feeling completely lost, saying, what did I do? Where am I? I'm lonely. Did I make the right decision?
To be honest, the relationship felt... I mean, here's the thing. I was supposed to go upstate Saturday, and I had an audition for a teaching position, and we had already arranged that I was going to come up, and when I called, like, 7:30 in the morning, she didn't take my call, but she finally texted me. And I called a couple of times, but she finally texted me that it wasn't a good day, and there's a long text, and it's this, that, and the other thing. And I was numb, but I think it probably did affect the way I went to the audition as well.
Sure.
And then I think when I finally realized Monday, when I realized I didn't get the gig because they emailed me, I think my heart really dropped out from me after that, because I felt like I screwed up and I should have just been more focused on that, the things.
I don't know if that's possible. You know what you've been going through, Tyrone. I don't know if it's possible that you could disconnect your heart. You were feeling sad. And like Lisa said, sadness was one of the biggest determinants of how the effect that you're going to have. What could you do? Shut yourself off, look like you're fine, hide it, you know? But you're an artist. You're a man who wants to live by who he is. And it sounds like you're in the path of going there, even though I must say to you that the pain I know you're going through, the pain of making that choice, is an enormously brave but difficult pain. And my heart goes out to you, you know? It just goes out to you. That's a rough thing you're going through. And it's congratulations on one hand. And on the other hand, I wish I could have you around here so I could give you a hug.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I appreciate it.
This is Armand DeMille with you, of course. So then there's a hindsight balance. There's a hindsight bias. And that's where you believe, you know, you believe that the two most, you look backwards and you say, you see, I should have known it. Like, of course, Apple and Google would become the next two most important companies in phones. You know, but sometimes you look back, and you look back just as a way of keeping yourself critical. Do we have time for one? We don't, huh? All right, say hello anyway. Just now the phone's starting to go like crazy. There's also the illusion of control bias, the tendency for people to estimate their ability to control events. Like when a sport fan thinks his thoughts or actions have an effect on the game. They show that in the Budweiser ads. And the Budweiser ads, you know, it's the way you put the can on the thing, you know, and this is going to make an effect on what you had happen. Did you see Sunday night soccer?
Yes.
The last minute of Portugal and the United States?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing moments, huh?
Yeah, that was me. I influenced that.
Yeah, you did, because you were saying something. You were speaking in Portuguese.
Yes, that game was insane. The last 10 seconds.
Beautiful, right? It's on YouTube. It is the second most tweeted of all tweets.
Pretty amazing.
Okay, so this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. We're going to be with you Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. How do you sort out these biases, Lisa. That's what I want to look at. I want to look at the way that people can get themselves to be a little better at being able to make choices.
I think what you talked about in terms of being able to pause is really important.
Okay, well, we're going to get to it. You have to learn about yourself. We'll be right back with you, my friends, and then we will take more of your calls at 212-957-2729. Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the buddy system. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those, and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org. Buddy. Make a difference.
This is Julian Joiello here at The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille and Lisa Arnone. And we're here and we're talking about cognitive bias today. Something really interesting that I found. And it's all about decision making and understanding why we make those decisions. So something else that I came upon was called an empathy gap. And this is really interesting to me, where people in one state of mind fail to understand people in another state of mind. Because if you are happy, you can't imagine why other people would be unhappy. When you're not sexually aroused, you can't understand how you act when you are sexually aroused.
Let me tell you how much this works. When a couple comes to see me, one of the first things I do is I ask them if they would report to me as if they were the other person. I said, so let's say that it's Tom and Nancy. I say, Nancy, imagine you were Tom. Tell me what Tom would tell me privately about Nancy and how he feels. And so she'll tell me, well, Nancy, they'll reverse the roles, if that's possible. Now, if they can't reverse the role, if she can't, if Nancy says, I don't know what he thinks, then I know what the trouble is in the marriage. There is no empathy. There is no way of crossing over. And in fact, nothing in their 10-year relationship ever made them cross that path, which is so interesting. And so, again, you
so
know,
that empathy gap is large between these two.
And when I see some people who are wealthy, the way they look at people who are poor, you know, you can't imagine what that feels like. I remember once I was on a subway, and a woman gets on the subway, and she's got, like, she starts screaming, and she's yelling, and I'm at the other end with some guy in a suit and tie, and she starts yelling. She says, "Let me out of here, let me out of here," and he's being critical of her. I don't know why they even let them on the subway, and I looked at him, and I said, imagine what it is like to be her right now. Imagine what that feels like. He luckily stopped for a moment, and he said, "It must be rough. Thank you very much. Lesson well learned."
Exactly, exactly.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about this negativity bias, because I think that's something that comes up all the time when people come to therapy. They have a set of beliefs about themselves or about the world or about their relationship that get in the way of their ability to really do anything positive.
Right, it's the tendency to put more emphasis on negative experiences rather than positive ones.
So go ahead.
People with this bias feel that bad is stronger than good, and that there's negativity everywhere and it's constantly happening to them, and they'll perceive threats more than opportunities, even though there may be equal amounts in a certain situation.
Yeah, and what I think is really interesting is that it comes from an evolutionary standpoint. It's better to mistake a rock for a bear than a bear for a rock. So you need to be looking out for yourself. But one of the things I always feel that I'm doing with people is trying to remind them that they're not in the same situation they were when those beliefs occurred. Like if you're a child and it's scary and you're sitting in my office and you're an adult, I can say, you're not that child anymore. And that's an introduction of a new way.
Right, you don't need to be as paranoid or as negative.
As scared, right, of what's going on.
Yeah, it happens a lot, because I know a lot of people who just talk at the negative. That's all they could talk. I know one woman, if you ever say anything to her about anything, she compares it immediately to something else she knows that was better. And it's like it's an automatic.
Also, guys, the phone number here in our office, we'd love to talk to you on air, is 212-957-2729. 212-957-2729. That's the number here at the studio, so we can put you on the air and talk to us about this stuff.
And, you know, let's talk about now the Julian effect, which is also called the halo effect.
Well, I don't know the Julian effect, but the halo effect is where we take one positive attribute of someone and associate it with everything else about that person. So a lot of people will do this. They'll find out that one guy is an amazing writer, and they'll just think of him only as that, and that's everything about him.
And that'll happen with people who might appear, even me. You know, Armand DeMille, he's so great, he's so sympathetic, he's so empathetic, you know, and let me call him and ask him for some money. Right? Hey. Sometimes I lose my halo.
We all lose our halo sometimes. I also think about people who, when you first meet someone, they can do no wrong. And you're in love, and you're infatuated, and there's nothing that comes out of that person's mouth that doesn't sound like the best thing ever.
Well, that's the need-based bias, which is a little different than the halo bias, because what we're looking for example, if you see somebody beautiful, mm-hmm. and you say, wow, what a physically terrific-looking person.
Right.
And because they're terrific-looking, everything about them's got to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Usually not the case. 212-957-2729. Mike, you're on the air. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, how are you? How are you doing?
Good, Mike.
We have a fantastic show I've listened to for years.
Thank you.
And I actually came to you a few years ago, and I've actually gotten married in November, so it really helped me out a lot. I was seeing one of your counselors there at the office.
Oh, I'm so glad that worked out for you.
Yes, thank you very much. I wanted to ask with this bias, I've heard this before, but I forgot the name of it. Like, if someone, like, say, a real estate agent wants to put a sign on your front lawn, it's big. And it's like, no way, I don't want that sign. But then they come and they say, what if I put a smaller sign? And then you accept that. And then you put the smaller sign on your front lawn. Then down the road, okay, maybe we'll put a bigger sign. So it looks like at first you say no, but if you do it in small increments, you tend to say yes. Is that...
Well, let me ask you something about in life, in your life.
Yes.
Have you always felt confident establishing your boundaries with people?
Not to say, not really.
Not really, right? Now, let's think about your mother.
Yes.
Right? Your mom. Did she cross over the boundaries of your life?
Like, in what way?
Like, you know, if you wanted to be alone in your room and your mom felt like talking, she'd just come in your room either
right,
way.
Right, yeah. She would cross boundaries or not.
So you would have no way of giving people boundaries. And what would happen here, because you grew up that way, is you'd negotiate boundaries. So your mom would say, come on down, and you'd say, I'll be a minute. See, and that's already negotiating a boundary. So what you're talking about that happens on your front lawn is a reflection of some stuff that's still hanging around from when you were a kid.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's hard for you to say pure no.
Right.
So let me hear you say it.
No.
No, right. No, no, think about this. Hey, Mike, can I have some money?
No. What do you need it for?
You see what I mean?
Yes.
You have any children?
No, I don't.
Not yet, right? Can I have your firstborn?
I'm the firstborn, yes.
Okay, no, but can I have your firstborn child?
No.
No. What do you need him for?
What do you need him for?
Mike, thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Armand Milliken.
Yeah, partly what he was talking about was that decoy effect we were talking about before.
What is that?
So, again, we used the example of a fast food restaurant with three different sizes of soda, starting with the largest to sort of deter people away from getting the smallest. So it kind of introduces an idea that you wouldn't choose, but it sets up a context for you to compromise. So that you can compromise for that smaller sign or the medium size drink in the end, instead of the largest or the smallest.
There's also the ostrich effect. You know about the ostrich effect, where you keep your head buried in the sand to ignore negative information? And that often happens, you know, it goes along with other ones, like the halo effect. Let's say you're looking at a house to buy, and you're considering a house to buy, and somewhere you may notice there are termites. But you ignore it because the house looks so beautiful, because the people who are selling it are so sweet. And so your different biases come up, and according to the mood you're feeling. Another one that you have is the placebo effect, where believing that something is happening helps because it happens. It's just you're trying to predict that something takes place because it's happened in the past. Let's just take another caller. Hold on a second. Harb, this is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Harb. I've called you before. I see you're getting into cognitive therapy, and I'm over 80 now. You probably know me as Tim. And I took some of this, but I don't think I took it enough. So I'm still in a lot of trouble mentally. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. I don't do anything anymore as far as drugs. I'm 44 years off alcohol and 14 years off smoking.
That's amazing.
So I enjoy hearing your voice. I listen to a lot of WBAI, but I'm not hearing your show much. I don't know whether
we're on Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 o'clock.
Okay, well, am I going to be on the air at all?
You're on the air right now.
Oh, yeah, because my wife's in the bedroom with another radio.
And she's listening to the program?
Huh?
She's listening to this program, too?
Probably, yes.
All right, well, say, what's your wife's name? What's your wife's first name?
Mary.
Mary. So say something to Mary on the radio right now. And tell her what you love the most about her.
How fatty.
Could you give me something emotional? besides her fanny.
Her great ability to understand me and like you were talking before, change places. She has what's that word? I can't think.
Empathy
of
gap.
Empathy.
Yeah, I have a lot of trouble with words now. Maybe I know too many.
Harv, I'm happy you've got Mary. Mary, I'm happy you've got him, Tim, and thank you very much for calling in.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. There's another that seems to be very important, which has to do with certain types of personality, called the planning fallacy. This is the tendency to underestimate how much time it will take to complete any given task. And you see it over and over again with people starting to plan, starting to do something, and then they get distracted, and they're going to do that, and then they're going to do that. Or I've just got to go to the store, or I've just got to make one call. And over again, they're getting caught up by time. And that's another bias that happens. It's called the planning fallacy. Here's our fifth male of the day. Because I guess women don't have these things. Christopher, hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, great, thank you. Okay, my thing is that I'm dating this girl, and I was married, and in my past marriage, my ex-wife was violent. She attacked me a few times. She came to my apartment one time. She attacked me, and then she called the cops on me, saying that I attacked her. The girl that I'm dating now gets angry, and she physically attacks me and trashes my apartment. So,
something you must be doing, huh?
What?
What is it you're picking, Christopher?
So I called 911 and I had to go to the emergency room because I got injured, and I filed a report. But she's upset with me, but I don't think she understands that. My past relationship, I had this problem, and the other person wound up calling cops on me. So I guess I was biased, I suppose. And she doesn't understand that. I don't understand why she doesn't understand that. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you're basing your decision on something that happened in the past, right?
Yes, exactly.
But I think that no one gets to hurt you. So once that happens, all bets are off.
Exactly. I feel like I need, because the police officer even said, you need to defend yourself.
Well, my question to you, Christopher, why do you enjoy, and I can understand why do you enjoy such tumultuous relationships? Why do you pick people who have this potential? What is it about you? Because there's got to be a reason. This is where you look. You know, if you walk down the street and you fall in a hole once, that's okay. Fall in it twice, all right. But if you fall in it a third time, you're in real trouble. Here you are, choosing a second violent relationship or a relationship that's explosive. And what we have to find out is what it is in you that is attracted to and finding resources in this kind of person. I don't care about the logic about the police or about any of the other stuff. If she hits you, I don't care. You're choosing this.
I see.
And because you're choosing it, that's what you want to find out. And that's where you do your work with somebody like Lisa. She helps you uncover the bottom of why you would make choices like this.
Mm.
You see, that's what's important, not who's right, who's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why do we make these choices? Same thing happens over and over again. There's a famous quote, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten.
Yeah.
Christopher, thank you for calling in.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. 212-957-2729. Six men in a row. Six. Let's see.
Let's see what this one is.
Let's see if we have a representative of the other.
I wonder if it's because it has to do with decision making.
It may. All right, let's go. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. If I have all of these biases, am I a mental case? Because that way I don't have to blame myself.
There's another one called the student's disease that we used to have as kids when we were in school, believing that you have every symptom that's possible. Hi, John. How are you, and how is your life going?
Fairly well.
And where do you have the roughest time?
Roughest?
Yeah, what's rough for you right now?
Okay.
I'm going to look for romance.
No, that's okay, I think. But the decision-making with the biases, I think maybe sometimes when I'm weaker, I have more of these biases or something.
Sure, that makes sense. Makes sense because you pull on these things when you do feel at your weakest. And how do they affect you? They affect you in work?
Yes, and it's very tricky because the biases, I'm constantly making decisions, so the biases immediately affect me, and then I have to figure out why I was affected and how. And
It's a lot of thinking you do.
Yes.
It's a lot of thinking you do, so you must create a great deal of tension for yourself.
Yeah, but I'm able to step away.
And you do step away. When did you learn to do that, John?
Because if I don't, I go broke. So
sure.
So how do I? The question is, how do we know that the bias is there, and how do we?
Well, it's the pause and reflect thing again that Lisa was talking about. You know, the bias is at work when you feel kind of impulsive about your decisions. If you could really pause and reflect, where you pause is you pause to a place of quiet. You take the project, you take the idea, you take the thing you're working on, and you put it out of your mind completely. And if you can't leave it behind, don't make a decision on it. You've got to be able to step away from it completely and then come back to it with a peaceful mind. Now, that sometimes takes a great deal of work, and you have to learn how to do it. Other people know how to do it. So that's my recommendation, is really taking that breather in between and stepping completely out of it.
And sometimes I think therapy provides that breather. It's a sitting in a room in a peaceful place and then going back.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks.
Sure. 212-957-2729. 8 men have called in. No? 8, 7, 6, 5. This is the bias of exaggerating.
But it's pretty compelling.
It's pretty compelling information. Maybe it's only men who respond to biases.
That can't be. That just can't be, Armand.
It just can't be. Okay, here we go. Hanny.
Hammy.
Hammy. Hi there, Hammy. You're on the air.
Okay. I've been in relationship, one for 2 years, one for 15 years, one for 6 years. And I ended all three of them because it wasn't working. I'm single for the last 4 years. I don't want to, but I have a horrible feeling about female. I don't want to be involved with female anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in relationship. And I want to take this hatred out of myself. I can't.
Sure. It's not hatred. It's fear. It's fear. They have the power. Your need for these women, for women, that makes you open and vulnerable to the power that they have. It's not that you want to hate women. You just hate the power that you give them. So if you, what you real thing you want to do is learn how to hold on to yourself, Hammy, even when you're in a relationship. And what you're probably used to doing is giving yourself away. You know? And so it's not, I don't believe you hate women or hate females. I think you're just afraid. And I would imagine after three relationships where you've gotten bitten, it makes a lot of sense.
I've been the most happiest in my life in the last 4 years. The most, I've never been that happy. I'm a single father, it's me and my kids, and I'm so happy. And deep down, I want to have a relationship, but I said to myself, this happiness is so important to me, I would not give it up.
That's right. If the only relationship you could have means that you're not allowed to be happy, that you got to be involved in problems, you certainly don't want to give it up. So, Hammy, congratulations on your last 3 years. We have to be... We have to be.
It's beautiful, but still, deep down, I don't want to grow old, all by myself.
Hammy, send me an email.
I don't want to sell.
Send me an email and let me go over that with you privately, okay? Let's talk about it further. The email is.
Thank you.
Sure. The email is armand@thepositivemind.com. We will try tomorrow to come up with a subject that would appeal to the other sex.
Right. This was not it.
Amazing. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Great.
We got seven men today.
Seven men. Nice group. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We don't have any time for more calls, but you can send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. If you want to hear today's program, it'll be rebroadcast on WBAI's website or on my own website, The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Hope you're having a decent day today.
We're back on Days. Health Styles is now on Thursday afternoons from 1 o'clock to 1:55. Tune in to hear alternative views on health, healthcare, and health policy. We share stories and perspectives that you won't hear elsewhere. So tune in on Thursday afternoons at 1 o'clock for Health Styles, sponsored by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. We're back in the light. On WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Join Resistance in Brooklyn at a rent party for WBAI, which also doubles as this year's anti-July 4th barbecue. The benefit will be held on the day after the holiday, that is, Saturday, July 5th, from 4 to 8 p.m. on the roof of the Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue between Hoyt and Bond Streets in Brooklyn. Proceeds will go towards the station's rent at the Commons. For a sliding scale requested donation, you'll get dinner, entertainment by Spirit Child and others, and good conversation with like-minded folks. Again, that's Saturday, July 5th from 4 to 8 p.m. For more information, call Resistance in Brooklyn at 718-399-8366. That's 718-399-8366. Help keep BAI alive.
This is Chloe Glickman, and I'm an intern at WBAI. Looking to get professional experience doing something you're actually passionate about? At WBAI, I'm able to develop skills in journalism, marketing, event planning, editing, social networking, and much more, all while working directly with producers and the management team. BAI is always taking applications for credit and non-credit internships, so get in touch today. Send an email to internships@wbai.org for more information. Join the team that supplied New York with independent radio for over 50 years. Help keep community radio going strong.